exigence, what the CEO said. You wanna be in our good graces, here's the drill. When we say do this, you say I will, because we just want your compliance, not you making a walk scene, saying you don't like mass domestic surveillance or autonomous killing machines. These corporations all had better get in the queue. When the army says you will, you say I do. Don't be misanthropic, learn how to properly salute. Do what we tell you, ready, aim, shoot. Because we just want your compliance, not you making a walk scene, saying you don't like mass domestic surveillance or autonomous killing machines. Because we just want your compliance, not you making a walk scene, saying you don't like mass domestic surveillance or autonomous killing machines.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, none of the new horrors has altered the genocidal intent of the Jewish state in Palestine. Nominal ceasefires may have slowed the rate of the slaughter, but the killing continues and spreads. Outside of the Gaza Strip, the pogroms in cities, towns, villages, and the countryside conducted by settler soldiers have escalated, with thousands murdered, injured, and imprisoned, as in Gaza and Lebanon and now Iran. Hospitals and other civic infrastructure are targets of a military that knows no limits. Salam Hamdan is a Palestinian political activist and social feminist from Ramallah in the West Bank. She's been in Canada for some time now, watching from here, her home set ablaze. Welcome back to the program, Salam.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me again.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Salam, Amnesty International's report, Global Impunity Fueling Israel's Unlawful Annexation Measures in the West Bank, released last week, says in part, quote, unconditional support of the USA government combined with the pervasive lack of international accountability for Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza has further emboldened Israel to escalate its illegal actions in the rest of Palestine. Salam, what are you hearing from back home about the situation there right now?
Oh, yes, Chris. Unfortunately, every time I get back to your program, it's even worse news. So the West Bank has been all the time overshadowed with what's happening in Gaza and now with what's happening in Iran. In the West Bank, we, the inhabitants of the West Bank, we call ourselves these days the forgotten area. During the past couple and a half years, since the start of the, that massive genocide in Gaza, 1,121 Palestinians were killed in the West Bank. Recently, 13 inhabited areas, villages and Bedouin areas down in the Jordanian Valley area and Area C have been evicted and displaced. And very little media about that, actually. A number of refugee camps have been destroyed, and approximately 60,000 people. This is not a new news. It's been happening continuously during the past 2 years. 60,000 people are displaced, especially in the northern West Bank. We call it, it's the war of the settlers. The settlers are completely unleashed and supported by the Israeli cabinet. And of course, all the time, as ever since, guarded by the Israeli army, they systematically attack the Palestinian villages and the Palestinian cities, sabotage, destroy, attack people. And nowadays, they are also targeting the animals, especially in the southern West Bank villages, because, the livestock are like one of the main resources of livelihood in these areas. They also torture animals, which is something new. And there are, various videos on the web about that. The checkpoints are intensified all the time. The gates surrounding every Palestinian inhabited area, whether a refugee camp, a village, or a city, and today are all closed because of the war with Iran. Full control of all over the resources of the Palestinian Authority, using the finances of the Palestinian Authority to, you know, to as one of these, you know, collective punishment measurements, you know, depriving tens of thousands of employees from their salaries. But worst of all, and of course, the imprisonment. In one of the Palestinian organizations, human rights organizations, it has been recorded that during the past 2 years, approximately 21,000 Palestinians were imprisoned from the West Bank, let alone Gaza, and subjected to the most horrific conditions in prisons, torture and starvation. But the worst of all is that a couple of weeks ago, the Israeli cabinet have issued a new policy, actually talking about abolishing all the land laws and land registrations from the inherited from the previous authorities, the Ottomans, the British, and the Jordanians, which would actually help them. This is a very, very dangerous procedure because it's kind of unleashing their hands to, you know, also confiscate the private lands, the registered lands of the Palestinians in the villages and in the cities in Area A and in Area B as well as in Area C, and confiscate it. So the situations are escalating. I do not exaggerate if I say it's escalating by the week.
Well, Erica Guevara Rosas with Amnesty International, she says, quote, land registration is yet another Israeli euphemism for land grabs and dispossession. Make no mistake, she says, full annexation is the goal, and Israel has already laid much of the groundwork for achieving that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, they talk about the annexation of the West Bank, and they are laying the grounds to become a de facto, which is happening right now, actually. And there is no way. I mean, the other day I had a talk with my father because we have a piece of land. We cultivate olive trees. And he has a piece of paper from his father. His father had it from his father. Since the times of the Ottomans, a land registration. And he told me that this paper doesn't mean anything anymore right now. They are confiscating, and they've been confiscating enormous amounts of lands during the past couple of years and establishing new settlements. And they talk about inhabiting the West Bank by at least 2 million settlers. And they want to revive the law of the absentees, something that they have created when they occupied Palestine back in 1948, which entails that if you do not happen to be in Palestine, you are absent, you are recorded as absent. The Israeli government has the right and by law to confiscate all your properties, whether a land or a house.
And does that apply to absentee landlords that happen to be Jewish that are fleeing, it seems, Israel by the tens of thousands, right? Where they're going to get these 2 million more people to move to this area is a bit of a mystery to me. So, yeah, as usual, this is a one-sided arrangement in law. When you mentioned, Salam, the 21,000, more than 21,000 people taken prisoner by the authorities since October 7th, 2023, it's rarely mentioned and never on outlets like the CBC and other mainstream sources that it was actually these hostages in Israeli prisons, often under what they call administrative detainment, that...
Yes.
Was the cause of the original attacks in October 7th, was to get hostages to trade hostages for hostages.
Well, it is one of the reasons, because Gaza was subjected to harsh siege for 19 continuous years. And one of the reasons was actually, I mean, there were multiple reasons. One of the reasons is also to try to revive the Palestinian cause all over again, which was dying, and all the Arab countries were started to normalize with Israel. But the issue of the prisoners was a very important factor of it, because the Palestinians are getting were subjected to imprisonment in Israel since 1967. It is recorded that one of three Palestinians has been at least once in their lives subjected to imprisonment without any legal rights. Yes, the administrative detention, which is a used measurements in Israel, the vast majority of the Palestinians who get arrested are subjected to administrative detention, means that you don't have any legal rights whatsoever. You are under the military ruling. Your file is classified. No actual charges are pressed against you. And in most cases, it's a preventive measurement, like what has happened during this genocide in Gaza. They were just taking people inside the prisons just to prevent any disturbance in the West Bank. And you are subjected to 6 months, and the 6 months are renewable with a very short military courts. But nowadays, Ben-Gvir, the infamous Israeli minister, a fanatic settler, who has been lobbying, talking about the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians as a biblical duty all over the media. He is in charge of the Palestinian prisons, and he believed that every person who is imprisoned is a terrorist and is a big enemy of the state of Israel and has to be treated as such. So he is implying extremely, horrific conditions on the prisoners. One of these conditions is to starve them, to provide them with the minimal amounts of food, deprive them from medication. Many prisoners who have chronic diseases, it's a death sentence. He is trying to issue, working with the Israeli Knesset, to issue an exclusively death sentence for the Palestinians, because Israel doesn't have death sentence. And it has passed through the first reading, actually.
Yeah, let's talk about that. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Salam Hamdan. She is a Palestinian political activist and social feminist from Ramallah in the West Bank. She is speaking to us today from here in Canada. Salam, the United Nations Human Rights Office of the High Commissioner released a report a month ago today. Israel, UN experts urge withdrawal of death penalty bill. Given the nature of these mass arrests that we were just discussing now, Ben-Gvir bringing in trying to get this policy enacted that essentially would be an automatic, it seems, death sentence for those whoever is chosen to be killed.
Definitely. I mean, he've been proposing that, and he's been compelling all the Israeli parties to vote for that. He even presented a note the other day to the Knesset telling them that he has been approached by 200 Israeli doctors who are willing to conduct the execution freely. Netanyahu, as far as I know, is trying to pose that because he's hammered with criticism from the European countries and the human rights organizations, and he wants to focus on other things. And knowing that at the same time that the executions are actually happening without even the need for that bill in these Israeli prisons, whether under severe torture, 70-something, I don't have the accurate number, of Palestinian prisoners have died in the Israeli prisons in the past 2 years, and they've never talked about in the international media. Those who are starved and had chronic malnutrition and then released to die outside of prison. A friend of ours, just a couple of weeks ago, was released and hospitalized. And 4 days later, he passed away because he had cancer and they refused to treat him. 1 year without treatment in prison for cancer. And as soon as he was, you know, about to die, they just released him to die outside of the prison so he wouldn't be recorded dying in prisons.
The UN says that what's being proposed is what they call a two-track death penalty system in the West Bank imposed by military courts under military law for quote, terrorist acts causing the death of a person, even if not intended. The UN says the law is vague and overbroad. They say, quote, since Israeli military trials of civilians typically do not meet fair trial standards under international human rights law and humanitarian law, any resulting death sentences would further violate the right to life. Denial of a fair trial, they say, is also a war crime. And this is where we stand right now.
Yes, that's very true. But as I'm telling you, Chris, it's not only the problem of issuing that bill, which I believe with what's happening right now in Israel and with the rise of fundamentalism and extreme right wing grab of the power, it's gonna come eventually. I mean, the bill is gonna pass through eventually. But the problem is with what's happening right now in these prisons, where it is actually a death sentence, where these, you know, most of the prisoners are deprived from any medication and are subjected to the severe torture. And the torture now includes also rape. In prisons, there were a couple of incidents where prisoners died of violent rape. So this is something that the international community and the human rights organizations around the world has to be aware of.
Well, and unlike some of these unfounded claims of rape made by the Israeli government surrounding October 7th, some of these, at least, tortures and rapes and deaths in custody have been filmed by the jailers themselves and released onto the internet.
Yes, and all the prisoners that have been released talk about that. Some of them, they have addressed the media. Others, they were shy to address the media. But every single prisoner has been either subjected to rape or sexual harassment. At one point.
Salam, as I mentioned earlier, you're in Canada. We've heard here shocking stories about the ineptitude, seems too kind a word, but the policies of the Canadian government when it comes to refugee applications from Palestinians. Can you tell us a little bit about what the situation is now for Palestinians that are trying to find a place to escape to or that are here already and trying to stay?
Well, I cannot really talk about the policies, but as I am not quite fully aware of what's happening, but I know I'm hearing all the time about how difficult it is for the Palestinians to apply. Taking a Canadian visa in itself, is extremely, extremely difficult. Canada is, I don't actually know about any other country, not even the United States, who doesn't provide any consulate services in the Palestinian territories for the Palestinians, except for Canada, which is, I find it really strange. The Canadians do not provide any services. You have either, as a Palestinian applying for a visa, you have either to go to Jordan, to the Canadian embassy in Amman, or to go to Tel Aviv, which is impossible for the vast majority of the people. And have a look right now. Now, there is a big war in the Middle East, and the borders, of course, are closed as usual. If you are trying to seek a visa, it's quite impossible for a Palestinian. So this is what we don't understand, actually. And knowing that Canada has finally acknowledged the state of Palestine, it's even a legal duty for Canada to act differently towards the Palestinians. Well, I'm not saying that they have to host the Palestinians as they do the Ukrainians, but at least to further facilitate things, especially for the people from Gaza and the West Bank. Let me give you an example. My husband recently, he was trying to seek a Canadian visa to come visit me here in Canada. I'm staying just for a little while here until things cool down there. And, of course, he had to go to Jordan. And considering that the borders are closing up abruptly, and it's very also risky nowadays to move around because of the settlers and because of the war, he wrote a letter to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Canada, inquiring, telling them as a lawyer that you have acknowledged the state of Palestine. Every other country is providing services for the Palestinians in the West Bank. Why won't you? Why don't you? And it took them a few days to reply to him. And finally, he received one sentence, one single sentence. As a Palestinian from the West Bank, you either have to go to our embassy in Tel Aviv or to our embassy in Jordan. Thank you for understanding. That was their reply.
Is it possible to go to Tel Aviv at all?
For
no.
Some,
no.
No.
Well, and as you said,
especially now. Yes, especially now. Yeah.
Well, and we there are obligations, international treaties that Canada is a signatory to that seems to be ignored or to be given such poor accommodation that they might as well be ignoring them entirely.
Yes, I mean, let me give you an example. For example, Britain does not have a consulate office in Ramallah. They have a cultural office to serve the British citizens. But when you apply online for the British visa, they assign you an appointment for the biometrics, you know, to collect your fingerprints and eye prints. And they assign you an appointment where they send an employee from Jerusalem, from their embassy from Jerusalem, to Ramallah to collect your biometrics. So they provide other services to facilitate things for the Palestinians. This thing the Canadians refuse even to do, which is the minimal.
And I'm trying to get my hands around what this government does to. We certainly posture on the world stage as being a welcoming place, especially for refugees. And yet it seems some refugees are whisked through the gates and others are made to be left milling about in danger.
Well, it's actually a paradox for us, the Palestinians, because they are supporting Israel in its policies, even indirectly. You know, they're somehow complicit for ethnic cleansing, for getting rid of the Palestinians in any way, whether a genocide or transfer. But on the other hand, they're making it almost impossible for the Palestinians to travel. So it's like a sort of paradox. You are assisting Israel to empty the country, but you are prohibiting the Palestinians from traveling.
Well, what can you say then, Salam? What can Canadians that are hearing you and hearing these things for the first time, what can they do to find more information, more good information on what's going on in the West Bank? And as you say, being overshadowed by what's happening in other places, in Iran today and Venezuela yesterday and Cuba tomorrow, perhaps. Where can people find out more and help?
There are many, there is lots of information reported all the time by the human rights organizations, as you said, by Amnesty International, by OCHA, by even Israeli organizations like Beit Salem. They record very systematically, they update their data all the time. By a number of Palestinian organizations like the Human Rights Commission and many prisoners organizations, the Prisoner Commission, Ad-Damir, Hurriyat. There is a website called Shireen.com after the late Palestinian journalist Shireen, who was killed a few years ago by the Israeli army, that actually updates the information and the data about Gaza and the West Bank. So there are many, many places that are informing. When I said that it's overshadowed, I said that overshadowed by the mainstream media, by your media in your countries. Today we have 365 children in the Israeli prisons. Some of them are subjected to years in prison, or are under the administrative detention. Some of these children are in solitary confinement. Those will never appear on the news in your countries and in other countries, even in the Arab countries. But there are lots of information about them posted by these organizations.
Yes, until recently, for the CBC, our state mandated broadcaster, even the word Palestinians was problematic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand that, but your country has finally acknowledged the existence of Palestine and acknowledged the state of Palestine. So.
Yes, it says now finally that they recognize the principal representative of the Palestinian people in the personage of the Palestine Liberation Organization. I don't know how representative that is these days, but we have a long way to go. Sadly, we don't have a lot of time to get there. Salam, are there parting words for our listeners?
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for always providing this platform. Any platform for any Palestinian voice or a friend of a Palestinian is very, very important because of what we're talking about, because of the attempt, the aware attempt of, suffocating the Palestinian voices. So thank you very much for this opportunity. I just would like to stress upon the fact that what's happening in the West Bank is extremely dangerous, no less dangerous than what's happening in Gaza. I believe that they are somehow satisfied with what they have done in Gaza, although they didn't manage to push the people out of Gaza, but they have leveled Gaza to the ground. So they are satisfied in that area, and now they are extremely focused on the West Bank, and they are working very, very, very fast to annex the West Bank. Practically, it is somehow annexed. Nowadays, I mean, they just need to issue the bill and it's legally annexed. And the Palestinians in the West Bank are subjected to horrific situations. They are attacked by the most fanatic Israelis, the settlers, who have a biblical belief that it's their duty, their religious duty, not only to ethnic cleanse the country, but also to torture the Palestinians and even torture their children and animals, which they are doing right now. So I wish if our friends around the world, and now we have many friends around the world, pay a little attention to what's happening there.
Well, thanks again, Salam, and I can only express my deep-felt shame at my country's response over this, not only these 2.5 years, but for the last 80 years and the role that it played in the creation of the Jewish state. That's all I've got for this week. Until the next time, I want to also thank Andy Worthington for coming on. Thanks again, Salam.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Shocked at what he read, such intransigence, what the CEO said. You wanna be in our good graces, here's the drill. When we say do this, you say I will, because we just want your compliance, not you making a walk scene, saying you don't like mass domestic surveillance or autonomous killing machines. Corporations all had better get in the queue. When the army says you will, you say I do. Don't be misanthropic, learn how to properly salute. Do what we tell you, ready, aim, shoot. Because we just want your compliance.